Special Education Research. This is episode 63 and focuses on John Cote and colleagues' pedagogical case about Rob. This is an audio version of the PEPRN blog that can be found at www.peprn.com/news.aspx. Whose needs are being served? As parents, coaches and teachers, we're often faced with a dilemma as to how much we encourage young people to follow certain pathways. This is particularly prevalent when young people show a high level of competence in a specific sport. How much should we encourage them to specialise? Could they be a professional? Should we send them for extra training? Should they miss school and school fixtures to compete for county or even professional teams? By training, will they miss out on social development with their friends? This podcast might assist with some of the decision-making. It suggests that, until the age of 16, specialised training and structured training are not as advantageous as we might have been led to believe. Rob. Rob is an 11-year-old elite junior ice hockey player who has, according to his coach and his father, an avid hockey player in his own right who, as a younger man, played at the highest amateur level in Canada, a chance of playing professionally, something that his father aspired to but never achieved. To date, Rob has played elite junior hockey for 3 years and has the advantage of being one of the oldest players in both his team and his league. He's also one of the biggest and strongest, and while his skating ability is below average, and he isn't particularly fast, he revels in the physical side of hockey. He reads the game well and uses his body and his strength to his and his team's advantage. Hockey is a big commitment for Rob and his family. 4 training sessions and 2 matches a week in the season equates to 10 hours of hockey a week. When travel, half an hour each way just to train, is considered, this figure rises to 25 to 30 hours a week during the season. As a consequence, Rob has little time for anything else, and the time he used to spend playing sports for fun with family and friends has greatly diminished. He has stopped playing basketball competitively, and while he still plays baseball, there is pressure to focus on his ice hockey. His father and his coach want him to work on his skating through a power skating clinic in the summer, 5 hours a week. And they feel he should also engage in an off-ice training program each week throughout the year, again, 5 hours a week. Rob loves ice hockey, but not the power skating or the off-the-ice training. His father, in contrast, would like to see Rob invest more time in his all-round training, and he has Rob's coach's support in this. They both feel that if he, Rob, wants to continue playing at the elite level and have a chance of a professional career, then he needs to engage with the training. However, Rob is more interested in playing ice hockey, among other sports, for fun with his friends, rather than investing solely in ice hockey and the associated training. Let's look at the pedagogical case in more detail. Rob's case is individually explored from a sports psychology, biomechanics and exercise physiology perspective before these ideas are collated and examined pedagogically. Throughout these explorations, Rob's age and his potential development as a young man and as an ice hockey player are weighed in an attempt to best consider how to move forwards. From the perspective of sports psychology, Rob already has 2 birth advantages and 1 family advantages. His first advantage is the day and month of his birth. Because age group teams in Canadian ice hockey contain players born between the 1st of January and the 31st of December in the same calendar year, it is possible that players could be 363 days apart in terms of their birthdays and still play on the same team. Rob's 5th of January birthday offers him some potential advantages. This advantage, known as the relative age effect, shows that older athletes are overrepresented in elite sports teams. This is primarily because older athletes often, but not always, have growth advantages. While these advantages do not always translate into talent, see Rob's skating ability, Rob's size has certainly helped him. His other advantage of birth is where he was born. Research suggests that living in a small town with open spaces, opportunities for play and a connection to a community is advantageous when it comes to playing professional ice hockey. Additionally, having access, 30 minutes away, to facilities, coaching and training in a larger city, but not a metropolis, also helps. His family are also an advantage. To experience prolonged engagement in sport, it helps if you have a supportive family. Parents provide opportunities for kids to play sport by enrolling them, facilitate engagement by paying subs and transporting them, and offer care and comfort. Furthermore, if parents are active, then their children often want to be active as well. Pressure to participate, however, can also have a negative impact on engagement, especially at a younger age. Such pressure, especially sports specialism, can lead to dropout. The developmental model of sport participation is used to suggest that children between 6 to 12 should be engaged in sampling sports, i.e. be involved in free play with friends and little involvement from adults. It is not until the ages of 13 to 15 that children should be specialising and engaging in a balanced programme of play and practice. Only when they have reached 16 should children begin to make an investment through high levels of deliberate practice in one sport. It is at this age that young people are better equipped mentally and physically to increase specialised practice and focus on one sport. Biomechanically, there are a number of ways of enhancing and developing Rob's skating. He needs to improve his technique and be able to coordinate his movements. In addition, he needs to improve his off-ice skating and conditioning to then be able to improve his skating. In this respect, Rob's coach and father are correct, but such specific training should not be encouraged at the expense of his sampling of different activities. Instead, other activities and games that include strength and plyometric components, like basketball and volleyball, where he would jump hundreds of times in a game, would be more beneficial to a player as young as Rob. Physiologically, a similar story emerges. While a combination of aerobic fitness, leg strength, and anaerobic power, predominantly the last two, will help Rob in improving his skating, neither on or off ice training is recommended at this age. Instead, Rob would benefit from being allowed to mature and grow while participating in activities that he enjoys and that are characterised by play rather than dedicating himself to training. Regular running sports that involve sprinting repeatedly will help him to develop while maintaining his engagement and enjoyment. It is clear that Rob and his family face a dilemma, but it is clear from the multiple perspectives offered that specialisation, both in terms of sport and training, is not the best thing for a child of his age. The short-term gains certainly don't seem to outweigh the long-term outcomes. It is important that Rob maintains his current level of involvement in sport and should engage in far more play than deliberate practice. Cote and colleagues suggest that, statistically, there is only about a 0.01% chance that Rob will play enough professional hockey to even draw a player's pension, and this chance is reduced the earlier he specialises. Instead, he should invest more time in deliberate play and maintain his passion for ice hockey. His passion emerged from child-led activities such as play, as well as interactions with peers and adults. He experimented with skills and learned how to learn, not by being told, but by doing. In other words, he learnt without formal instruction or adult involvement and didn't need the explicit knowledge adults associated with the execution of the skill. He was provided with opportunities to play for fun and engage in implicit learning. This involved what Cote and colleagues call a non-linear pedagogy that didn't place skills in a hierarchical structure to be learnt in turn. These are the aspects of his learning that made him elite, and to switch to an adult form of learning would not be beneficial. It is important that we understand the needs of the learner and stay away from regimented training environments until a child like Rob is ready to make a full commitment to this environment. We need to drop the adult need for specialism and the traditional approaches and take a longer term view. We need to think of a slower developmental pace and understand the long term impact of our interventions. Only then can we truly put the needs of the learner first. So in concluding, how does this discussion relate to you, your sessions and your context? Did it make you think or consider something? I'd love to hear your thoughts and so would others, so please share at www.peprn.com/news.aspx. Thanks for listening and join me next week for the next Pepin podcast, where I will discuss Christine de Martelaire's and colleagues' pedagogical case about Yasmin. Acknowledgements. I would like to thank Vicky Goodyear for her work behind the scene as copy editor. Her help certainly forms a vital part of the production of this podcast and in getting it out on time and in a semblance of coherence. However, it is important to note that any mistakes that remain are mine. Thank you.